Welcome to Reboot Republic, the podcast that goes behind the headlines and looks at the big issues in this republic of inequality. We are the podcast of solutions and the podcast of hope, and I'm your host, Rory Hearn, and I'm joined today to discuss the whole issue of childcare and early years education and poverty pay and poor conditions within that sector. I'm joined by Deborah Reynolds, who is an early years educator from Galway and a union activist. Deborah, thanks a million for joining us today.
Thanks very much for having me.
And also by Sabrina Ryan, who is a SIP2 organizer working on the Big Start campaign. Sabrina, thanks for joining us as well.
Thanks very much for having us.
So in terms of SIP2 recently did research on the childcare and early years educator sector and found, unsurprisingly really, for many of our listeners and the wider anybody who's engaged at all with this sector, found that significant numbers of childcare workers, almost a half, are actively seeking another job due to low pay and insecure contracts in the sector. And almost every respondent, 90% of respondents to the survey, were struggling to make ends meet due to poverty pay. And most said as well they would leave the sector within 5 years if conditions did not improve. And it is almost, there's about 26,000 people working directly with children in the sector, and they are overwhelmingly female, and yet only 10% had access to employer-supported maternity leave. One worker in response to the survey said, "How can we attract school leavers into a sector that's known for poverty-paying conditions? Our sector is near collapse due to the exodus of qualified professionals in search of better pay and conditions. And the pandemic has shone a light in our sector, which shows that we need to be recognised and valued as essential frontline workers." Now, this time last year, almost 30,000 people, childcare workers, early years educators, parents, marched through Dublin calling for professional pay and recognition and a proper quality support and funding for the early years services. I was at that march with my then four-year-old and lots of other parents, and it was a huge day with huge momentum. But unfortunately, of course, COVID came then and that momentum fell away to a certain extent. But of course, within COVID, we have seen the essential role of care workers, childcare, early years educators has been and has come to the fore, but unfortunately it hasn't been recognised by government, even though it has been by wider society. So this Friday coming, the Big Start campaign is asking people to take action from 1 o'clock to wear something red, make a poster and post the picture to social media under hashtag value early years. So to highlight what is going on in this sector, we've got our two wonderful guests with us today. And I'm going to start going to Deborah and just ask you, in terms of how is the sector doing in regard to COVID and the current situation? And you are at the forefront of providing an essential service. How is it going?
Well, overwhelmingly, what you'll hear from people is that there's a lot of fear and anxiety amongst people who work in the sector. Just uncertainty. And we are at the forefront. You know, the advice is to not wear PPE. Some places they are wearing, you know, masks and that. But we're at a stage where we're minding children of frontline workers. And frontline workers are what they are. They're working in hospitals. They're working in healthcare. And I suppose people are just fearful of COVID. They're fearful of bringing it back to their own families. They're fearful of, you know, it's just a big whirlwind of fear, really, that's happening. So I suppose what it has done, though, is it's highlighted an awful lot of things about the sector. You know, people have been looking at us as if, you know, well done for what you're doing. You've helped open up the economy, because we were back on the 26th of June last year, and we've been kept going. And the only way to describe it is that everybody's been going in fifth gear since June. And, you know, as well as fear and anxiety, there's an awful lot of tiredness. I know you might try and ring a colleague who works in the sector and they'll just text back too tired, because it's go, go, go. On top of what we do already, there's an awful lot of asks of what we do in our job. And there's extra on top of that with COVID, extra paperwork. We still have continuing inspections that are going on. So there's an awful lot of work that was already, you know, needed to be done. And now there's extra. And I suppose, you know, there's 26,500 of us in the sector. And if you could ask me, has anything changed since we did the march last year? And the only thing that's changed is we're more anxious, we're more stressed, we're more overwhelmed with work. In regards to what we were demanding, you know, good pay and conditions last year, and more investment in the sector, it really hasn't happened. The sector has been supported by the wage subsidy scheme, but, you know, workers aren't seeing that. So there's also a sense of, you know, people, you know, working in the sector, a sense of unfairness because nothing has been done.
And sorry, yeah. No, I think that that's kind of what really strikes me, that the lack of valuing of the workers, you know, and of the sector, and the valuing by, you know, that on the one hand, we know it's absolutely essential to keeping, you know, the public services going, the health system. And yet there's an utter failure to acknowledge that, and not only the lack of value, but as you say, at the same time, this huge increase in anxiety, worry, pressure. So workers and the sector must really almost be feeling much worse than they were last year, almost less valued in a way.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there are people that, you know, with the results of the survey, you know, that, you know, 90 odd percent are going to leave the sector in the next 5 years. They will. What people have been doing is they've been educating themselves, and they've kind of educating themselves out of the sector. They're sidestepping into special needs assistant or social care, where you can be on a pay scale and you can get a little bit of, you know, value put on your work, a little bit of respect. I know just before we went back in September, when the ECCE free pay school year started, I know I spoke to a colleague of mine here in Galway, and I have to say, I actually cried after the conversation, because this particular lady has been in childcare for, you know, 20 years. She's done her degree. She wants to do a master's. But because she sidestepped into social care and she worked in social care throughout the COVID closure, she then decided, no, I can't do it anymore. And it's just simply the lack of value, because even just going in, she herself was overwhelmed by the fact that in her social care job, she got expenses for driving her car. You know, there's little tiny little things that you can't, we just don't get. We, you know, as you say, only 10% of us have maternity pay, 98% women. And, you know, if you have a baby, you're on your own. And then if you come back and work in childcare again, the odds on is that you won't actually be able to afford childcare for your own children. And that's happened to a lot of people. I know a colleague here in Mayo, and her children are cared for by her own mother rather than putting them in a childcare service because it's too expensive.
Yeah. And that's absolutely the other side of this in terms of the cost for parents. And, you know, I can vouch for that as a parent. You know, it is, you know, even more than a second mortgage, you know, or rent, you know, it's higher cost. Childcare costs are just phenomenal in terms of putting children into care, into childcare. And I think just in terms of the other part of this, I was wondering, because we know, like, and as parents in particular, you see it, but you know as well, that that kind of continuity of care between, you know, with a provider and a child is really important. And that experience that's built up, and you can see the difference, no different than any job, you know, the difference that someone who's experienced and who has done training and who is, you know, able to give the care and understands that, you know, bit in terms of the developmental, you know, aspects of a child, you know, and increasingly with the curriculum, with the ECI years, that you can see that experience, and losing that is a massive loss for our children.
Absolutely. And you can see it with the, you know, there was a thing when I started in the sector about 13 years ago, there was a little bit of an honor code where if you wanted to change jobs, you'd change at the end of June. You'd finish out the year with the children and then swap. But now what you find is people are just swapping jobs. They're moving around and they're trying to find a service where they're treated better. Maybe they get like 50 cent more an hour. And then all of a sudden what they realize is they get burnout from moving from service to service and they just leave the sector. So it's very challenging. It's, you know, in regards to, you know, quality and that continuity of care, we have all of that. And one of the things I've talked about to colleagues before is I have the experience, and I would have had a mentor in my own mother who worked in childcare. And I'm able to pass on when I get students in or a new colleague in, I'm able to pass on little tidbits of information. And if I don't know something, I'll go and I'll find it out. And that's where kind of quality lies. It is in the theory and it's in the academic and the bookwork, but it's also in the little tricks of the trade and little things that you may notice. And what's happening now is a lot of people who are, you know, 10 years plus, we're actually in the minority now. In the last public survey that was published, there's only about maybe 20% of staff that have 10 plus years in the sector. So there's no kind of build up of, you know, you have your skill set, but there's no kind of like compounding the skill set to kind of build it up and be amazing. And I know the government, they're constantly talking about quality. They're constantly talking about, you know, being the best in the world. And, you know, we have wonderful policies and, you know, we're the best little country in the world for having policies around childcare. You could fill filing cabinets full. But I think ultimately the lack of connection between policy making and then how the staff who are supposed to fulfill the policies, how they're being treated, that's where the, you know, that's where the problem is, the lack of good pay, the lack of conditions. And it's left us in this position where it's not just a crisis, it's cascading of crisis after crisis. And I don't know, when I say the sector is on the verge of collapse, I don't say it like, you know, it's not an underestimation. Genuinely, I don't know where the sector is going to be in a year if we're left the way we are.
Yeah, that's very stark. Thanks, Deborah, for that. And I'll come back to you in terms of, you know, what you think are kind of solutions around it. But you definitely paint a very, you know, stark and I know accurate picture. And, you know, again, I see, you know, the engagement, you know, I have with my own children and the childcare providers, the, you know, that absolute, you know, stress, the sense of, and it just strikes me, the sense of lack of value, you know, people who put in so much every day, you know, to looking after children and providing such an essential service that, you know, just that lack of value for them is just, it's horrible. Like, and it's so wrong, I think, as a society, what we're doing. Sabrina, Ryan, in terms of what you kind of have got as feedback and talking to workers, what's your sense of, you know, how COVID has had an impact on childcare and early years educators?
The last year has been an incredibly monumental challenge to people working in the sector. I've never seen the sector take such a beating, to be honest. I'm speaking to people every day who are, they're exhausted, they're downtrodden, they are frustrated, they're afraid, they're angry. I could go on and list all the different types of emotions of what people are expressing to me every single day. But tiredness and utter burnout is one of the major parts of this. What you referred to it when you were talking about the survey at the start, and the pandemic has just uncovered the problems that were already there. So the problems that actually exist in this sector of low pay, poor working conditions, and the rate of turnover as well, they were always there. The staffing crisis, this is not a new thing. This has been, I mean, Deborah can attest to this. People in the sector have been talking about this for years, and now it's like the fault lines have all been exposed. And now, you know, what was before a job that was, you know, it was there and people kind of didn't take much notice of it and they took it for granted. And a lot of workers will tell me that, you know, they felt like glorified babysitters. That's a really common expression that people use when they talk about how they are perceived kind of by the wider society. But now that's changed. That's drastically changed, and that's been flipped on its head, because these workers are right there on the front line as a backbone of the wider workforce, never mind the service that they're actually providing to the children, the education and the care. But I mean, I've talked to a lot of my friends, and I've seen it all over Twitter and I've seen it on social media. You can't turn on the radio at the moment without hearing about, you know, sectors that are, you know, crying out for, I need to be able to work and I need to be able to put my child into creche or daycare or preschool or school, as it were. So we were really seeing like how all of society is structured around this particular public service, and this is a major part of the conversation, is where we have this service that is a public service and it is just at its utter breaking point, and it's about to crack, and it's about to crack. And it's been about to crack for several years. However, we now have the potential for a mass exodus out. And that is really, really, really worrying, because ultimately What do you do if this service doesn't exist anymore? And what do we do as a society if this service doesn't exist anymore? Not only does it support, you know, the workforce, it also supports women going to work. It supports women in work. I could probably wax lyrical about that all day.
No, I think it's very important. And we know that, you know, there's major issues around, you know, the inequality of care responsibilities that have, you know, been heightened under COVID, and, you know, that women have been left with homeschooling, that they've been the ones who've had to withdraw from work, that there's all sorts of, you know, gendered inequalities around that, that need to be challenged and need to be raised. And I think childcare and the prioritization of childcare, as in the lack of prioritization that childcare and early years sector has got within COVID, reflects this, you know, patriarchal system that's still working. You look at, you know, across the board, government, you know, people talk about it, you know, all the time, the lack of female voices within the decision making, the lack of consideration, childcare, you know, numerous journalists and others have highlighted that it's like this imaginary fairy looks after the children, you know, that this is it, the fairies look after the children. It's not taken seriously. And it is a big problem. And of course, now we're seeing, as you're saying, that the system is cracking, and that it is about, you know, as you say, on the verge of collapse. And of course, part of the problem is it's not actually, it should be a public service, but it's not a public service.
Yes. And there is this, the whole model is a mix of, you know, public community services and private services. So mm-hmm. I suppose in one sense, the easiest way to describe it would be, you know, almost like public and private. You know, but it doesn't really necessarily fit those words. It'd be more like community providers and then private providers. And everything is funneled in through this one system. Okay. And realistically, what needs to happen is all of this needs to be fully publicly funded. It works in other countries. This isn't something that, you know, is reinventing the wheel. There are models in other countries. And I mean, we can look towards the Scandinavian countries and look at all the beautiful models that they have, but they work. And the reason they work is because they invest in it. Like the investment into the sector is just so low. The UNICEF benchmark for annual investment has a recommendation of 1% of GDP. And currently, the investment into early years stands at around 0.2%. So in order to actually bring that funding up, like everything that Deborah spoke about is all kind of knitted together with one word, and that's money. And like, unfortunately, whether we like it or not, money makes the world go round. But we need to be able to invest into the sector to ensure that the money is being used appropriately, properly, and that we're investing in the staff that are there and to keep the staff that are there. There was a picture posted on, I think it was on the Big Start Facebook page, possibly I saw it today, or it may have been on our Twitter page. I've seen an awful lot of pictures from last year over the last 24 hours. And there was a lady who brought this incredible placard to the march this time last year. And it was a T-shirt on a hanger. And on top of it, she had like taped a balloon to it. And on the balloon, it was a question mark. And on the T-shirt, it said, "This face should not have to change all the time." And that is a major issue, is, you know, this isn't working for staff, they're leaving. And that has a direct impact on the quality that is able to be delivered to children. And that has an impact on families and an impact on children. So if we can, you know, if we can secure the workforce in here, there are better outcomes for children and better outcomes for the wider society as well.
Mm, yeah. And in terms of that, Deborah, how do you see kind of this, you know, what do you think should happen in terms of this now? What should the government be doing?
Sabrina mentioned there about, you know, the way public childcare is funded in other countries. And I suppose we had a little mini experiment between April and June of last year, where the government paid the wages and they paid the overheads through an extra version of what they call the temporary wage subsidy childcare scheme. So 100% of childcare was paid for 4 months last year. My wages was brought up, we were all brought up, anyone who was earning below 350 was brought up to that, so we wouldn't go on social welfare. It was the kind of a preventative measure from us having to sign on. Stark little bit of fact there is both myself and my colleague were actually brought up to €350. So there's an awful lot of people earning way below that. So we were okay during the pandemic because we were earning slightly a bit more, which doesn't really make sense, but that's the way it was. So we have that. And at the moment we have the employment wage subsidy scheme. And as part of that, most businesses have to prove that they're at a 30% loss, I think, or something along those lines. There's a childcare has been granted that they don't have to prove they're at a loss. So they're being given the employment wage subsidy scheme since September up until the end of March. And the minister says that wages are being 80% funded. So I suppose what I'd like to see is just fund the wages, just pay my wages. You know, that's what happens with the teachers, with the SNAs. An amount of money is put to one side for paying staff. And then you can put other money to the other side for the running of the business. Because I know I work in a community service, but we still have a business side. We still need to be able to afford things. But I know myself, I've allowed my wage to stay low in order to sustain the business that I work in because the investment from the government is so low. And a lot of childcare in Ireland and a lot of services in Ireland are run off the back of us because we earn such low wages. But I suppose what I'd like to see for the future is I'd like to see the government pay the wages. And ultimately, part and parcel of that is we do need a mechanism for getting a professional pay scale. And that's what we don't have that. If you look for a pay rise, they'll say, well, what's the sector average? There isn't really a sector average. So you could have somebody, I know people who pay €14 an hour, but a lot of people, they're kind of like, they would be a limited amount of people who pay, more than $12.50 an hour. Most people would be on the $10.20 an hour. And it doesn't add up, the way the money is invested, you're not getting what you want from it. You're getting maybe short-term spurts of quality. But once the people leave and they bring their skill set with them, and the government also funds, you got your CPD. I mean, when I did my degree, I did it at night, but that was partially funded by the government. My first aid, my child protection, all of those things that I'm bringing with me, years and years, it's just gone. It's just left. So there's this massive investment been put into people. But when the people don't exist anymore, because they've moved on and they're being paid better and treated better and valued more in other sectors, there just doesn't seem to be a value for money. And it's kind of been running like that for an awful long time. And I suppose what we need to do is we just need to invest in people and invest in them and their skill set, invest in them, but let them be able to live their life. Something I've spoken about before, and it could be something that I'd be embarrassed about, but I rely on social welfare payments. I rely on the HAP payment and the medical card because I don't earn enough. And because of that, you could let it, it used to hit me in my, your self-esteem would be low and you'd think, oh, why am I on this? But in actual fact, once you kind of get into it, it's the sum total of why I'm in this situation that I'm in is because the government have so badly run this. I started in 2007. I should be on a good wage now. I shouldn't be struggling. I shouldn't be reliant on social welfare to get me through. And the government, they talk about quadrupling funding. Well, I haven't seen any of that. So I'd just like to see more money come in, but for the money to be in the pocket of myself and the 26 other thousand colleagues that I have around the country who are struggling.
Yeah, I think it is really just so, wrong. And that, again, children, and, we still haven't learned, our lessons from our past and, the undervaluing of children, the poor, it's something that goes back to our, the proclamation, the idea of cherishing all children equally, that we don't value children, we don't value their cares. And we still have a deeply, flawed approach to that in this country. And, you are the victim of that and the victims of this. And I suppose that's what's so important, that you're getting your voice, you're taking your voice, you're, taking action on this. And I know, with the march last year, there was massive parent support. And I think that's perhaps, and maybe Sabrina, you could comment on this. I think that there's a sea change in terms of public attitudes on this, that there's no longer, you know, really, I think the public consensus would be, yes, we should have a public, you know, childcare, early years education system where, just like our public education system, everybody can get access to it. There should be nominal charges, if any charges at all for it. And that should be there. It should be there. Like the current system is utterly just disastrous. And that's what the public believe should be, should happen at this point. And it's really a question of how long are the politicians going to ignore what actually the public view is on this.
Oh, 100%. Absolutely. I mean, it's outrageous to think that parents are still paying the highest fees in Europe. You know, I mean, that has to stand out to everybody as being like this statistic that we should be hanging our heads in shame about. I mean, the idea that people are, and I'm going to use the phrase that everyone uses, it's the second mortgage, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I spoke to a woman recently who had twins, and I said to her, out of curiosity, how much was your full daycare? It was over €2,500 for two babies to be taken care of. She was forced out of work, you know. Yeah. Like you'd have to be making an absolute fortune in order to be able to pay, you know, to pay for that and to make it worth the while, you know. So it has that massive impact. And Rory, you're 100% right. There is a massive shift in people, their attitude towards it. They see the value of it, and they're really seeing the value of it now. But there are a couple of things that need to happen, and the funding just needs to be increased into this. And there is a group, the Together for Early Years, which organised the large protest that we saw last year. And that's the coalition of workers, community and private providers, and also the early years academics as well. So there's three specific things that need to happen in order for this, you know, the change that we need to see happen to make it actually happen. And that's increasing the funding by at least doubling it. There needs to be a professional pay with a mechanism. Okay, so not just, you know, okay, we're going to give you a higher capitation grant, for example, and we're going to trust that you're going to do it, and we're going to trust that it's going to go in the right way. There needs to be a mechanism to ensure that the money is going into the pockets of the people delivering the service. And there is a promise in the programme for government for a JLC for the sector, and that is starting to get underway at the moment, and it's kind of early doors on it at the moment. And there also needs to be the new funding model. You know, the system doesn't work. It needs reform. There needs to be an achievement of quality and affordability. And this competitive market system just doesn't deliver that. So we need to completely rethink that. You know, scrap what we have, take out a blank piece of paper and let's start again, because we can do that. But we can look at the evidence from other countries to see what works. So what we're calling for in SIP2 is a publicly funded model. And it works, and it works in other countries, and it can work here. We just need the will to deliver it.
Great, Sabrina. Thanks a million. I think that kind of highlights very clearly, you know, and sets out what's needed. Maybe last word for you, Deborah, and unless Sabrina wants to come back in again before we finish up, on just, you know, I suppose encouraging people to take action on this, you know, and to support the action. Why do you think that's important? And
I think it's important to, you know, support the action, just even for a bit of levity on Friday, just for to have a bit of fun. We can't go anywhere. We're, you know, we are kept in our houses at the moment. But I think, you know, one of the great things that has happened for me is that I've built myself up as an activist. And I have to say, being an activist does wonders for your self-esteem. And you just kind of, you go and you realize that if you don't say it, who else is going to say it? And if you don't highlight it, who else is going to highlight it? And I think one of the major things there is, you know, being in the trade union and joining a trade union, it's really helped to, you know, build us up. And I think people need to kind of, well, first of all, join the union would be great. Because, you know, the more in the union, the more power you have. But, you know, get there, get in, get active. If you have a problem, my whole thing, my whole new philosophy is don't just sit there and give out about it. You know, do something, get angry about it, but use your anger constructively. And I suppose if you use Friday, it's going to be a bit more fun than being angry all the time, because a lot of the time When you talk to people at different childcare meetings, sometimes, and I'd say, Sabrina can attest to this, sometimes it's like being in a counselling session, group counselling, because it can be really upsetting hearing what some people have to put up with. I suppose we just need to move on and have the action, but let it be the start to something for you. Take part in the action. And I'd encourage everyone outside of childcare, take part as well. It's just an online, it's fun. But if you know anyone who works in childcare who is struggling, or if you know anyone who's part of the sector that I work in, you know, tell them to get out there, show them how to do it, show them how to give out to their politicians. You know, it's those things that are in the activist toolbox that people need to have. And one of the things about, you know, you mentioned earlier on about the lack of value put on the sector. And I think, you know, we've a lot of things that are wrong with the sector and a lot of feelings. But my personal thing is I feel like the sector has a lack of self-esteem because of the lack of value. And I think the fact that, you know, it's 98% women we don't necessarily have that history of fighting for our, you know, our rights in the workplace, because, you know, it's all, you know, a lot of our parents, you know, our mothers were stay-at-home mothers. So it's a kind of a new, different world. So I would just say, get out there, use it as a little springboard to become an activist, to get involved. And every voice, every activist, you know, change can happen. It's slow at the moment, but I would hope that at some stage in the near future, for the sake of the sector, that there is change for the positive.
Thank you so much, Deborah. I think that really says it all. And, you know, I think absolutely change can happen. And you know, you are a great example, you know, of someone who is, you know, taken up that and taken action. And it is so, it can be very hard for people to take that step into, you know, doing something public and speaking. So I absolutely commend you and thank you for that, because, you know, you are the change makers, you know, the change makers, which will get a better, you know, public education, public childcare and early years education system. And I absolutely believe that. And I thank you for that. And absolutely, I echo your call on people to support that on Friday. It's maybe you could outline, Sabrina, just explain what people can do briefly and then.
Yeah, so obviously we can't take to the streets like we did last year, unfortunately. It would be great if we could, and to remind the government that we're still here and that there's still 30,000 very, very angry people out there. But you can take part virtually. So we're having a virtual day of action this Friday. So the workforce and anyone who wants to support it can wear red. That's the colour we've chosen. That's the colour of the campaign. And a red hat, a red scarf, a red jacket, whatever you've got, and take a picture and basically use the hashtag value early years and to show your support for the sector and to stand in solidarity with, you know, if you are working in early years, you're standing in solidarity with your colleagues. But if you're a parent, you're standing in solidarity with the people who do care for and educate your children. And, you know, as Deborah said, she did the work for me there, you know, joined the union. Everyone should be in a trade union, no matter what you're doing, no matter what job you're in, you should have the support of your trade union behind you. But if you're a parent and you are bringing your, what are they called? The little smallies. Smallies, that's the word you use. Smallies. Children.
Our little ones,
dearest darlings, whatever. Yeah, the little.
I have
ones.
Lots of other names that don't sound as pleasant for that for them.
So you're bringing your smallies into their setting, into their creche. Have a chat with the staff. Say to them, listen, we support you. Are you in your union? Talk to them. Encourage them to become part of this as well. It is a sector that is. They're busy, they're tired, and they're flat out with work at the moment. But if you can give them that little bit of encouragement into it, that will make all the difference.
And it might be ideal to do it in a thumbs up, socially distant way.
Yes, exactly.
Lots of thumbs up on Friday. Thumbs
up, smileys. God, it's really the phrase of the week, isn't it? The little thumbs up.
yeah. Non-passive aggressive one. A genuinely empathetic one. Listen, Sabrina, Deborah, thank you so much for joining me on Reboot Republic, and best of luck in the campaign, and we'll continue to support it as it goes on.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And just to remind our listeners that action is taking place on Friday, this coming Friday, and the hashtag is Value Early Years, and please support it if you can. And reminder as well that we are an independent media, independent podcast that relies on you to produce, to fund the production of all the production costs in terms of hosting it, putting it out. And you can become a patron supporter of ours. Go over to patreon.com/tortoiseshack, and whatever you can each month, support us to keep going. And yeah, thank you very much, and we'll talk to you soon.